And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? Welcome into another Hold That Podcast. I am your host, T-Bob Hebert, joined by my co-host, The Athletic's own Brody Miller. Brody, what's up, dude?
Not too much, man. It's been a little bit. I mean, obviously, you know, in the off season, so we kind of slowed down a little just for our listeners, so you know. But spring football's here, a lot going on. So it's just good to like think. I hate when like every podcast are like, things are feeling normal. But I will say, like, I'm getting on like football Zooms lately, and just like last fall football Zooms felt so like just depressing and like static and like just dry, and like now we're doing these and there's like actual like vibrance going on, and like we were able to go to a practice a week and a half ago, and we're going one this week, and like pro days tomorrow, and I'm actually able to go to that, and it's like things are like you're just starting to feel like you're actually covering football in a normal world, and that itself feels good. So it also means a podcast is going to feel good right now. So that's how I'm doing. How about you?
You know that's called the new normal. Sweet. Didn't get normal. Sick of hearing about that, did you?
Have you heard that the Roaring Twenties are going to be coming back? Because like I don't know if you've read that, but like I think that's what I'm saying.
Wait, that actually has escaped my grasp. Is that like the hotness right now? They're saying Roaring Twenties part
two. It's like a real thing, but it's just like there's just been like eight different think pieces that have been I've written or like seen on like different places of like, yeah, but like, you know, like after all, it's going to be like the Roaring Twenties again. Just like everyone's saying that, like it's like a fresh take.
Well, yeah. I mean, we are at a time where I think our wealth is distributed even worse than it was during the industrial baron lord time. So who knows? Either way, though, this is an LSU football podcast, and we are back, and we're feeling good. I'm getting vaccinated, Brody. So, yeah, I am feeling good,
dude. Vaccinated.
And we are getting back to normal, and it's awesome. And we're going to talk LSU today. We're going to be going weekly again for the foreseeable future. This break was just kind of natural. It wasn't even like we like sat down and talked about it. Just kind of happened. And so we'll be back for the next few weeks. We're going to talk today. We're going to start with spring practice, as there have been 2 weeks of spring now, a couple of scrimmages, and you know, it's the old, I always talk about it. It's the old Rey when she picks up the lightsaber, Luke when he picks it up. It's like, these are your first steps for the new team. Spring practice, fourth quarter is kind of your first steps. These are where you really start to get into it. Some pole position for the for the race that is the season come fall camp time. So this is where your 2021 team will begin to take shape. And after 2 weeks, we've got some interesting nuggets. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about the three things, each of us, the three things that are intriguing you the most right now about LSU football. Brody, I will hand the floor to you. Do you want to start?
I'll start just with the obvious one, like we like simultaneously like are obligated to talk about, but it is genuinely interesting because I didn't think it would be interesting, and that's quarterback. I think quarterback, I spent like 2 months saying, yeah, I think it's not really going to be a real competition. Like, I think it's going to be a fake one where, you know, it's going to be Miles Brennan's and all that. And I'm like, hey, they like these guys, so they're going to give them all a chance. But I mean, it really does at this point to me feel like a real competition. I actually believe that now. And I still think there's a good chance Miles Brennan's the starter. I just don't think it's like obvious anymore. And I think I've heard Max Johnson has just looked really good. And he's just a guy who, you know, I've heard the way it's been told to me is kind of like Ed Ogeron probably didn't really know how good Max Johnson was until he saw him in a game, which is what you and I were saying in the fall. That like, he's probably not a guy who's just going to like wow you in practice. Cause it's not just like, he's not like a physical tools guy necessarily. And then you saw, and then they, oh, it was really impressed what he did those two starts. And now you have that knowledge. Now you're seeing him in spring, looking at him through like a different prism. I think they're really impressed. And then Brennan, I mean, obviously I think he had a nice scrimmage Saturday. I've heard things look good. And then the wild card on top of that, and by the way, I'm not saying this person will start or anything like that. I'm not getting ahead of that. But they are, like, blown away by Garrett Nussmeier right now. They, like, he is the most talented is just the goods. Like, that guy is going to be a star in college football at some point. They really believe that. So it's just like, I don't know what I think is going to happen, but I'm surprised that it's even interesting and that it actually is this much of a competition, because I actually don't know what's going to happen right now.
Yeah, I think we kind of did our prediction. We both thought that Miles would end up winning that starting job, but Max is. So right now, if you haven't heard, I believe, is this how it's working, Brody? Is Max taking the first reps, but they are splitting them between three guys or four guys? Like, how exactly four is the rotation man. Working
yeah,
right now?
It's a semantic smorgasbord. Yeah, it is. Yeah, the first reps. I love that. Yes, Max Johnson is getting he is going first, but they are all splitting first team reps.
Okay. And the Max stuff is interesting too, because like you said, they didn't know how he would perform physically. They were always kind of in love with his intangibles though. Like, you always heard, like, this Max Johnson now, I mean, this cat could be good. And so then he ends up going 2-0. So I agree with those logic there. That's like, well, you know, we had one guy that went 2-0. If we really do believe that it's pretty much like an equal playing field into the competition, that's, you know, we have to choose some metric as to who should get the first definitely. Reps, and we don't want to make it just like seniority based. So yeah, let's just do by the record. And so there you go. Yeah, now I'm with you. I can't pretend to know who wins this job, but
I had one person say, like, it's actually, I mean, I'm not, this isn't like me reporting this, but I had one person suggest, like, right now it seems actually 50-50 between those two.
And that's a good problem to have. It's the inverse of something that may crop up later, which is the offensive line, where you have no competition. Not to say that you don't like your starters, but you have no room for improvement, really. You have nobody, like, pushing them to be better. That is not the case at quarterback. Those two, three, however many end up legitimately in that conversation, are going to be pushing constantly up until the very end. When do you think they would name a guy? I feel like maybe like halfway through camp. I don't feel like they would get into the brinksmanship of before the game. Maybe they would. They won't do that in the locker room. Maybe they will do that publicly. They will have a starter, I believe, named during fall camp, like 2 weeks in.
I think you pretty much nailed it. Yeah, it's exactly what I would say. I don't think they'll call it after spring. I don't think they'll call it early in camp. But I do think it will be a little bit like the Joe Burrow, 2018 one, where it's like they knew all camp, or at least a few, like 2 weeks left probably into camp. I think O and them knew it was Burrow, but they didn't technically say it's him until that Monday. I think that's a good comp. I think that's probably a good indication. And you know, the other thing I wrote about when, you know, O announced its competition and all that is that a lot of this is also, again, I don't think this is fraudulent because, as I just said, it's a real competition, but a lot of this is also like a little bit of Ogeron knowing how to, or learning, I should say, how to manage a quarterback room in an era of transfers where it's like, you need all those guys engaged as long as humanly possible. Yeah. So even if you know TJ Finley's not getting that job, you need him as engaged as possible so he's not transferring first thing. And then you also, it's like I've seen some people in my comments and things like that be like, man, like, why are they playing games? Just give it to Brennan. Like, he's earned it, all that stuff, and he waited his turn. And my counter to that is he's never really been in a quarterback competition, so he needs this to get better. Like, he needs a real competition to get better, as you just said about the O-line. And two, if he doesn't win it, that's proof that you shouldn't have handed it to him.
Yeah,
you know?
So exactly.
It's not like there is a wrong in this scenario other than like maybe the bummer of like not getting the guy the reps he needs. But like, I think that's, yeah, that's a little silly. I mean, so yeah, I think it's a win-win. And the fact that if it really is this close, it's proof that you needed it.
I mean, you always talk about it, but he's a Pete Carroll guy, and Pete Carroll's literally written a book on competition. So like, yeah, that's, it's absurd to think of handing to a guy. Like, can you feel for somebody like Brennan? Sure, you know, you wait your turn, you do all the right things. If he's to lose out on this job, that's a huge bummer. But it doesn't mean you can, I mean, it doesn't mean it was all for naught. You're still only always like one play away from going in the game. Look at last year. So everybody's just got to maintain the correct perspective if you're in this competition. And that perspective is, I'm going to put the blinders on, I'm going to work hard, and I'm just going to hope that things shake out for me. Like, I'm going to put my best foot forward and let the chips fall where they may. And that's what wins jobs or loses them. Like, that's what a good team is made up of, multiple position, you know, a ton of guys having that same attitude and doing everything they can individually to win that job. But if they don't, then I'm kind of staying locked in and trying to stay as relevant as they can, to, because you never know when you're going to be up. Okay, so if I had to say my most exciting thing about spring thus far, you're catching me on a Tuesday. We talked about this morning. There's a couple names that stood out, but one name that has become kind of a consistent mention when you talk about these scrimmages or just how it's going so far has been Jay Ward. And why Jay Ward becomes exciting is because, and first off, we're not going to talk coaching hires here. We talked them a lot already. It looks like the coaching hires are going very well. We'll see how it plays out. But what I love about Jay Ward is, first off, I love Ward's growth last year. I think this morning O said that for the last three games, he's playing like an All-American and whatever. Like, what he was doing was making game-winning plays. In Arkansas, he had the sequence where he gets a TFL on third and short and then blocks the potential game-tying or winning field goal. He has an incredible pick against Florida. He just seemed to really come on, like something clicked, and all of a sudden he was making game-winning plays seemingly consistently. And who's he going to play over? You got Eli Ricks, you got Derek Stingley Jr., even Cardale Flotsberry, that slot corner. Well, now they're talking about Jay Ward playing free safety, which is a definite position of need for LSU. And when you're talking about the value of safety in this modern kind of football world, this modern offensive football world in which we live in, my eyes this offseason have kind of been open to just how important that position is, a position that a lot of times I kind of looked over. But now when you talk to coaches and roster builders and GMs, everybody's really valuing that spot. And LSU right now doesn't have a great answer, maybe, or maybe it's strong. Like, the bottom line is that they're moving him to safety. He can still play some corner, but Jay Ward seems to be consistently making plays and emerging. And so all of a sudden now, if he becomes a consistent performer like he was in the final portion of last season, then you got Stingley and Ricks on the edge. You got you'd have Stingley, Ricks on the edge, Cardale Flott, who I think will be very good this year as your slot corner. You got Ward at safety, and then you've got a ton of other talent to try to win that other safety position. I mean, you're talking about an elite secondary right there. And then you combine that with what I think looks like a very good defensive line. And like, look, you're never going to get back to like the giving up 10 points a game. Those defenses are a thing of the past, but this could certainly become one of the best defenses in the SEC, if not one of the best defenses in the country.
So nothing I love more, T-Bob, than when you set me up for, and it's just, you know, like an alley-oop, because I have a story on Ward running first thing tomorrow. Hey. And I love everything you said is perfect. I love the Ward thing's fascinating because he, like you said, he was a guy who got criticized as much as maybe anybody last season. I mean, he was in the top, what, three or four of players on, like, the casual LSU fan was torching last
year. Yeah, it's a good point.
And it was because he was getting beat on, like, it looked like he was getting beat on all these big plays. But then, you know, he made the two plays to beat Arkansas. He had that interception against Florida. By the end of the year, you and I talk about it all the time, like, he just became a guy you want on the field. But I've had a bunch of people kind of, you know, like staffers, different people in the program reach out to me kind of and say, it's a bit misleading how people look at it because he was never really beat badly. He did his assignment, and basically in Pelini's scheme, there was like this double bracket scheme where, you know, the corner would look like basically they got beat, but it's because the safety got completely torched with either his eyes or his feet and they were late to react or they were freelancing, and it ends up looking like the corner's beat. And I think one, that explains a lot, and I think it's actually really informative on some of those problems last year. But two, I think that does show a little something about Jay Ward because I do believe that, and you know, and they're really high on him, like you said, and he's just a guy who, yeah, I think he's just a player, you know. He's just a guy who isn't like huge, he isn't a freak, but he just knows how to play the game. He's got a competitiveness, he's got a kind of grittiness. I remember the story was he's a guy that like Corey Raymond fell in love with in high school and they stole him from Kentucky. But yeah,
he was committed really to Kentucky,
and that safety competition now is fascinating because Todd Harris is like the guy you keep there because he's earned it and all that. But like, I don't know if his spot's set in stone. You know, he's a guy who's struggled. He's never really looked like a key starting SEC safety. You know, he's just always had kind of little flaws, but he has injuries and all that. Ward, I don't know if that's his long-term landing spot, but they love him there right now. And then Jordan Tolles is as talented as anybody. I mean, he could absolutely, and O told you guys this morning that, you know, he's one of the guys pushing. And then you do have those two true freshmen who are the most talented, who are top 100 guys, and Derek Davis and Sage Ryan. And I know you said all this already, but it's a fascinating spot because the talent's there. There's just like no experience or no, you know, sure thingness. And that's true of a lot of positions on this roster, but yeah, I'm all in on talking about Jay Ward just because he is so interesting. A guy that looks like he's getting beat all the time, but maybe we just have it wrong.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yeah, and that's where you mentioned kind of no experience. That's where Ward would, I think, bring some value. He is very battle-tested, and he's been battle-tested recently, and as you point out, he's gone through the shit recently. Like, he's had to deal with that. He's dealt with a firestorm of criticism, which was a way of kind of tempering you and hardening you, and I think making you a bit better. So I think Jay Ward to be very intriguing. I'll go ahead and do my number two.
Yeah,
we'll do like
draft
snake
style.
Drafts. Yep. Look at
Dude,
you.
Look at us.
Look at us. I mean, who would have guessed?
I think the longer we go without recording, the closer we tend to get. It's just my thing. It's like a long distance relationship.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder. I will say I'm going to stick with another individual, though. I've got a position group that I want to talk about, but I'll stick with another individual. And because I think it's, I guess in my mind, this almost could be substituted interesting for most surprising, because this is another name that got a lot of love this morning from both Derek Stingley Sr., some other people I've talked to, but that's on the offensive side of the ball, Devontae Lee. And really, when you're talking about
Let's go.
So really, when you're talking about wide receiver too, I find that position group to be fascinating as a whole, because when we think about it, we're like, oh well, there's like Kayshon Boutte, there's a ton of talent there, they're gonna be great, and that's true. But who are the top three receivers, right? Like, it's Kayshon Boutte, then who is it? Dre Jenkins, Zaquay Moore, is it Trey Palmer? Is it going to be one of these young cats like Brian Thomas or Chris Hilton? Like, you know there's a lot of good players there, but who will it be? And the name that almost never cropped up in the past was Devontae Lee, but now all of a sudden...
He was on defense last year.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden... he's playing linebacker of all positions, right? But all of a sudden, he has now gotten, I think, love from O like twice in a row, maybe? Like, gone out of his way to mention him. And then we asked Derek Stingley Sr., who's at every scrimmage, a similar question. And he was like, look, the guy on the wide receiver group that's shocking me is Devontae Lee. He said he's just going up there and, like, high-pointing balls, like, big-dogging balls, just, like, going up there and grabbing him and ripping him down. And so, maybe this is just a hot day for Lee or something, but I thought it was pretty fascinating for him to point out. Really, I guess, if I was to answer this now that we're just doing this, it would be that wide receiver position. I find it to be fascinating. I know it's going to be good, but who will it be? And there's so much competition there. I mean, another guy that got huge love today was Coy Moore. So DJ Mangus has brought back the summer of 10,000 catches. Well, who leads the way thus far? Coy Moore already has over 6,000 catches. DJ Mangus got here, what, like 2 months ago? Maybe three? So you're talking about a couple thousand a month. I mean, that is daily putting in the work. And lo and behold, Brody, funny how this works. He's got over 6,000 catches in practice or whatever. Who has the least amount of drops in the spring? Coy Moore. And Coy Moore is always already someone who I thought was coming on strong at the end. And then you're like, okay, well, but how are they going to find time to play all these guys, right? Because there's still Dre Jenkins, there's still Trey Palmer, there's still these young cats, still Kayshon Boutte. And so it's kind of like the quarterback room in that I don't know exactly how it's going to shake out, but it looks like you have a lot of guys that people are very high on.
The Devontae Lee thing is so tricky to me because we know he can. I hadn't heard that, so that's actually very informative. But thank you. We know he can be that stud jump ball guy. Because if you go back to 2019, it was like every time you talk to like Jamar Chase or like one of the corners, you know, like a Kerry Vincent or somebody like that, or one, like, or even a Grant Delpit. Like you talk to anybody and be like, man, like what do you see from those freshmen? Every single time they'd be like, Devontae Lee is the best jump ball receiver I've ever seen. Like they were always talking about like he would just make these absurd like Randy Moss style, just like over the corner in the corner, like in the by the pylon catches. And that was like his thing. But his problem was, you know, maybe didn't always, you know, understand the playbook. Maybe he wasn't doing some of the little other things right. But like he has that one like super marketable skill while maybe not being complete. And like, and it's not like there wasn't a reason. There is a reason they moved to linebacker. I know part of it was they needed depth there. It was a lot of it was that. But it was also like it didn't seem like it was working out long term at receiver. So it's like my feelings are, I completely buy that he is dominating, like he, like we're saying at receiver, because I do believe that is an absurd skill he has. He is so good at those one-on-one jump ball situations. And by the way, you need a guy like that. And I don't think Booty or Moore are exactly that. Even Jenkins probably isn't. So trust me, I'm not downplaying any of that stock. I would just love when I get a chance to talk either O tonight or sometime soon to ask like, how is he doing in all the other aspects of
receiver? You raise a good point. I didn't realize that was kind of a consistent,
Well, it was like, those weren't things we were all writing, to be clear. It was just kind of like one of those like throwaway comments every time we talked to like a guy. It'd be like, and by the way, man, Coy Moore just like jumped over Derek Stingley. You know, it wasn't like a big deal. Yeah. So I like that as one to bring up. And yeah, receiver is so weird. It reminds me of how we've talked about the running room for the past, 3 years, where it's like, you know the talent's good. It's just like which guy technically steps up. And at the end of the day, my guess is it is going to be Booty, Moore, and Jenkins. And then like maybe by like the last 6 games, like a Deion Smith ends up taking over or something like that, or Lee gets more time. But I just have this gut feeling that they trust Moore and Jenkins.
I mean, and then you still have the other freshmen too. So it's like it's a full room. Okay, so that's my number two. What's your number two?
I'm cheating, but you know what? Screw it. It's just like two guys who I just think are like the biggest just buzz names of camp. And it's Bug Strong and Mason Smith.
Yeah.
Bug Strong, I'm entering my 5th season covering SEC football. That's actually bizarre to think about. And I've never like profiled a JUCO player before he arrived. I've never done that because it's just like, one, JUCO players are a complete crapshoot. Two, it's like really rare for them to like be like, JUCO player, we know he's going to start. You know, we know he's a guy. You know, like it's always like, we need him for depth. Or like, I hope he plays, stuff like that. But Bug Strong was like leading up to when they stuck him and got him from Mississippi State. That was like a very strong feedback situation where it's like, this guy is the goods. This is a bigger win than anybody's talking about.
Yeah.
And this guy could start right away. So I wrote a big profile on him that ran the night of signing day.
Remember
that. He's a fascinating dude. It's one of the few times I'll ever say, like, I hope you read that story because it's just a fun story. And he's an interesting guy who once said in an interview to the Sun Herald, I like taking the life out of people when I hit them. So, yeah, this guy is
look,
a thumper.
I'll say it for you. Brody is an incredible writer. If you listen to this podcast and somehow
that's not what we do here.
Brody's work on The Athletic, you're missing out. So you should definitely go read the Bug Strong profile and everybody else.
I mean, linebackers just is another one of those positions I always talk about. Like, who's actually going to step up? Because I don't think anyone actually ever stepped up last year and things like that. Baskerville earned trust and all that. And I think you're seeing Bug Strong, like, really just, like, break out as, like, oh, this guy is a dude. And at the end of the day, I just have this – Damone Clark is improving. Damone Clark is, you know, a great kid and a smart kid and a guy they really think highly of. And obviously we know he's the physical tool. So I'm never going to rule him out, but he's also lost the chance to get like the benefit of the doubt, right? That was a really rough season. It just was. And you know, Micah Baskerville, Again, not going to rule him out either just because he was really good last year. But again, he's literally not with the team right now. Academic issues. They're hoping he's back by fall. Maybe even optimistic, I would say. But he's not here right now, so can't really count him. So yeah, I have a gut feeling it's going to end up being Bug Strong and Mike Jones Jr. as the two main linebackers. And that is really interesting to think it's going to be two transfers come in and possibly start right there. I'm not even going to begin to predict what Jones is going to be because I just don't know.
Yeah,
it seems like he'd be like a Jabril Cox hype, but no, Bug Strong seems like he is just a dude, and we've been bitten on the linebacker hype train before, so I'm not going to do it too hard. Well, but I'm still doing it. I can't wait to see him lay someone out.
Last year's hype train was nothing to do with Jabril Cox.
Talking about Damone Clark. That one. I'm like, this guy's going to be awesome.
Well, I would say, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know about Mike Jones. You're right. I'm right there with you. I do know about Bug Strong, and yes, everything you said is true. He will be your starter. I'm not willing to count out Damone yet. And what you said, I'm not saying you did. So on Bug, let's just focus on Bug here.
Focus on Bug.
I love Derek Stingley. Look, if there's a problem with his defense too, they don't have a lot of that meanness. They don't have somebody who wants to hit people and take their souls. In fact, that's actually another thing they were giving Jay Ward credit for, is being a thumper, which also you like out of your safety, kind of make people afraid to go over the middle. Well, I love what Derek was talking about this morning, Stingley Sr., where he was saying he was talking to somebody at the scrimmage, just like chilling, talking, and he's hearing this like, wow, it's kind of like crack, like this repeated crack. And all of a sudden he looks over and it's Bug Strong hitting people, just like laying down the wood, going through people's chest. And if you've been out on a football practice field, you know that sound that I'm talking about. Not all hits are created equal. And it sounds like this dude's doing it consistently. And they say that, you know, he's doing great with picking up the playbook, the calls and everything. So when you think about linebacker at LSU, it has been pretty incredible recently. I mean, you take last year out of it and you're talking about NFL guy after NFL guy. And who knows, maybe LSU found their latest kind of late bloomer diamond in the rough here in Bug Strong, because all I've heard about him is that he hits the hell out of people. He's really damn good. And he's bringing back some of that kind of nastiness, that enforcer attitude to the LSU defense. And what's great for him, what's great for him, Brody, is he will be playing behind what I would actually say is the third most interesting thing about this LSU team right now. Or third thing that's just on this random Tuesday in my mind. But it's all I talked about this morning. We did an entire segment on it, and that is this defensive line could be really damn good. Like really, really good. And when you look at how Nick Saban originally built the foundation at LSU to win championships and how that carried over in the Miles era, that was all built through the defensive line. Ed Ogeron's a defensive line coach. He knew, like, one of his main goals when he took this job was to get the D-line back to that level. And they're not quite to, like, the, you know, Lavallee, Roten, Spears, like Kyle Williams, just like NFL guy after NFL guy. I don't think they're quite there yet, but they could be. They might be. I mean, we'll see how this plays out. But when you look right now in the interior, and it's such a fascinating mixture of old and young, right? In the interior, you have Neil Farrell and Glenn Logan, two like super seniors. Ollie Gay's an upperclassman. Andre Anthony, they called the leader of this team before. And then you also have these incredible young talents like B.J. Ojulari, Jaquelin Roy. You mentioned him turning a corner, you know, Florida and Ole Miss last year, and just how dominant he was starting to look at that time. And then, as you said, dude, everybody cannot stop talking about the kid from Houma, Mason Smith. They said this dude is a giant. O said he had three sacks on Saturday. So Bug Strong looks like he's going to be very good, and it looks like he could potentially be playing behind an incredibly good defensive line. And then so you combine that with the best corner combination in the country. If Ward can help solve your safety issues, like, it's three levels of a defense that are starting to come together quite nicely, which is, I think, could maybe warm LSU fans' souls a little bit, considering what you witnessed defensively last year, which was just, you know, one of the worst defenses in the entire country. But what are your thoughts? Am I probably overhyped, but I'm off. Am I off base on this D line?
Well, for, no, and I actually want to dive into that. But and the last thing I'll just say on Bug is that, or I'm just going to Bug Strong, is just for our listeners, it's, I think it's obvious when you hear Thumper, you think like just like a big like 1980s linebacker, just like who can't run sideline
that
to sideline.
That is actually what I think. I in my brain, Bug Strong is like a 1990s movie character.
He's just
murdering people, and he's like 260 pounds out there, and he looks like Zach Thomas or something.
Exactly. But like you said, he's picking up the playbook well. I mean, the things I heard about him from, you know, his JUCO coaches, and it's tricky because I think you hate to get into stereotypes, but so often with the – it's pretty common, I should say, with junior college players that by, like they are not usually the highest football IQ guys. They just normally are. And you've played with probably plenty of them, so you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. But I feel like normally that tends to not be a strength.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And he is a guy who, I mean, the stories you hear is like he was a coach on the field. And his DC, for what it's worth, his linebacker coach, is a guy who's been on Mississippi State staffs and stuff like that. He's not just some schmuck, you know, so he knows what he's talking about. And he was like, this guy would like argue me on what play to run and be completely right and change the game. Or like he was calling things out in the field. And then also to counter the Thumper thing we're talking about. Again, he's playing Mississippi JUCO ball, which is the best level of junior college football. Every receiver he's facing is most of them are actual D1 receivers, and they would pretty often feel comfortable putting him in one-on-one coverage in the slot with a receiver and actually winning some of those battles. So it's like we are riding the hype train beyond belief, but I just the stories you're hearing so far are just so strong that I can't wait to see what happens. But back to the D-line.
Yeah, so that's Bug Strong, and how linebackers are set up for success is, well, with a great D-line that can keep guys off them and you know, force decision points and stuff. So what do you think about the D-line?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it is a clear strength. And yes, we also thought it was a clear strength last year, and it didn't like quite turn into that. So I don't want to get too ahead of myself. But no, this especially defensive tackle just seems ridiculous. Like a ridiculous level of riches where Joseph Evans, who by the way, for like 3 weeks looked like their best D tackle last year, is probably their like ninth right now or eighth. And even though he's looking really good in the scrimmage Saturday, like it's just kind of Mason Smith right now seems like he's probably the best freshman they brought in since, like, you know, it's him and Stingley, right? Like, yeah, he just seems like he is that holy crap.
I mean, he's immediately going to have to start dealing with Glenn Dorsey type stuff. Glenn Dorsey's name is going to start getting brought up consistently when it comes to Mason Smith. And in Louisiana football, like, as a D lineman, that's the equivalent of being compared to Joe Burrow. Like, there is no higher bar to have to live up to. So I feel for Mason in a way, but hell, all that means is that he's kicking so much ass that he's impressing all the right people to a pretty special degree.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And there's something to the fact that he's been in the spotlight for a ridiculous amount of time kid. I mean, like I knew who he was when he was a sophomore, and that's not that common. I mean, I cover college football in Louisiana. I don't often know the high school sophomores, and I knew him. You know, like he's been a very public figure for quite a while in the state, but he's still like from Houma, so I think he's still a pretty blue collar kid. So he has. I just don't think this is going to be a thing where like he gets a ton of attention and that kind of ruins him or anything like that. I think he's pretty used to it, and it's actually going to be healthy for him. I mean, he should actually like start as a freshman, which when you consider the depth they have and you have the fact that he's a freshman, it's like the one position you should never consider a freshman as an obvious starter. It's just absurd, the hype around him right now. I mean, he's the real deal.
Yeah, and to your point on like hitting the publicity, remember Julie Boudouin did that excellent piece on him called Big Man on the Bayou. So like literally he is already being championed as like the as this heroic type of figure coming out of one of the most Louisiana parts of Louisiana. I mean,
is he the best? I mean, I know, hey, no insult to your dad or Ed, but I mean, is he the best player to ever come out of that area?
I mean, I don't know. I can't pretend to know the area well enough, but definitely. I mean, look, my dad wasn't a big prospect. You know, he went to Northwestern State. Oh, went to LSU and then bailed and went to Northwestern State. So, yeah, I mean, there would be better old heads than me to probably answer that question, but he's the best since I've been doing this job.
And the positive with right. Yeah, I think you're right. And the positive with what you're hearing with the D-line groom right now is, and I promise I'm going to throw some negatives out there in a second to cool T-Bop's hype, so we're not going all positive here, but the D-line, it's the things you're hearing where you liked what you saw from Gay and Anthony and Ojulari last year, yeah, but what you're hearing right now is there is a better, because you have everyone back and you have, like we're talking about, this mix of old and young, I think that's always really important. You're having like you're hearing talk of Gay and Anthony just like constantly competing with each other and like going at it and like holding each other accountable. And when they don't do a drill well, they're like on their at the other one's ass and stuff like that. Then those two are holding Ojulari accountable. Like that is what you want. And I think that's like the number one thing that 2020 was missing that 2019 had. And I would love to recite that great Zach Von Rosenberg rant from the fall about just how that culture of like needing to put in the work kind of went away because they won a championship. And, I think that's really healthy to have right now.
Well, like the summer of 10,000 catches, right? Is that's 100%. Just a very concrete example. You did that for 2019. You didn't do it again. The new coach didn't, you just didn't do it again. And then DJ Mangus has now brought it back. So yeah.
100%. And yeah, D tackle is just kind of silly right now. We're like, Jaquelin Roy was obvious the next big thing by the time last season ends. Like that dude is a stud. That dude should make a lot of all SEC teams, and now like even he's getting surpassed because just like the talent's so crazy. And now you're like Glenn Logan and Neil Farrell, who are 3 to 4 year SEC starters, are like the boring names, even though like you know exactly what you're getting from them. I don't know how much upside they have right now, but they're very solid players. And it's just I think you have an embarrassment of riches on the D-line right now. And then the only thing I'll say to kind of mute like your
Hold on. Before we get to muting, I do want to wax romantic a little bit because let's say that Mason Smith lives up to all this hype. Let's say that LSU, gets back and they're vying for championships and like Smith is like a key part of it. There is a and then it sets you up for years of success, right? Like the golden generation that LSU's been living in, really, for the last 20 years. Like, Glenn Dorsey, in a lot of ways, maybe didn't kick that off, but he brought it to even a higher level. There would be something wonderfully romantic about a man from cut-off Louisiana and Ed Orgeron kind of coming out of the bayou to recapture that glory, and then this incredible player coming out of the same area, coming out of the bayou, out of Thibodeau, and kind of leading the restoration of the LSU D-line to elite status. I just, as a fan of kind of narratives, I enjoy that. I hope that comes to pass.
I'm cool with that. Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, even like a Stingley, I mean, we know he's probably the best football player LSU. I mean, shoot, I mean, Burrow's the answer, but like, in terms of just like literal, like just pure talent ability, like Derek Stingley's probably the best football player we've seen here in a decade at least. But he's pretty quiet, keep to himself guy. He doesn't really do interviews, anything like that. You know, I think Mason Smith's going to be a guy that just like matters here for a long time. You know, I know it's again, I'm just going with your romantic corniness. Like, I feel like he is going to be a thing. He's going to be a figure. He's going to be a a talker, a guy people know. Like, I think he's going to be somebody who's remembered here for a long time if all goes to plan. So I back that up.
Okay, now Mr. Context King, let's temper.
First off, I'm pretty high on this defense.
I know.
But I just wanted, because I think you were just like, I think you're getting a little carried away with like the possibilities.
Wow, absolutely.
Yeah. As much as I like am all in on Bug Strong and all that, like I still think linebacker and safety are incredibly insecure, I guess. For that. Like, you it's know, fair. I think I'm relatively confident Strong's going to be a dude, but I have no assurances on who the second starter is, if they're going to be good. Cause if it's Clark or Baskerville, you know, like you know what the pros and cons are already. So we know what that can show. We don't know what Jones is. So like Josh White is coming along. I do like Josh White, but like, you know, I have no idea what linebacker is going to look like. And again, it is a JUCO. You just have to have a, until I see it, I can't believe it. You just have to a little bit. And then safety, I'm literally writing a Jay Ward story. I think he's going to do well. Todd Harris, you know what you're getting. You have all these five stars, but again, like at the only known commodity in that entire room is the guy who actually looked bad last year. So as much as like, I think there's a chance safety's unreal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like there's no reason to be confident it's going to be good in 2021. Like that'd be kind of foolish of us. So I think this defense should be good. I think it should be, there's no, if this defense can just get their communication down and be like just competent from like a knowing what you're doing point of view, yeah, this defense should be
unreal. And that's why I'm confident, because in talking to Durante Jones, that's the feeling that I get, is that's his greatest strength is teaching. And listening to him talk about the impact that being a high school coach and teacher had on him and how to communicate to his students, like to, and you know, and customize to their learning preference, you know, kinetic, like all that kind of stuff. And I've read your articles on him and stuff too. It seems like that's kind of a constant theme with him, is he's a great teacher. So yeah, I know I'm being overly optimistic and a homer and whatever. You could probably actually play a lot of last year's defensive talk and we would have said these same things.
Yeah.
But I do feel really good. I feel really good right now about the defense. I feel really good about the team as a whole, actually, kind of right now, outside of a couple of offensive groups. Mainly that would be the running backs that I feel bad about. I mean, O straight up called them a major disappointment on today's show.
Yeah, no, that's not good. I mean, yeah, I mean, well, your two known commodity guys who are good, Davis Price and Emery, are both hurt, and they're two guys that, like, I don't know if they're exactly like the best locker room, you know, kind of guys, you know, stuff like that. I don't know if they're really like all that. So they're not like, they're not your good, you're not like, they're not your perfect veterans, all I'm saying. And then you have Trey Bradford, who I actually think they're high on, but again, he's in a tough spot. And then Goodwin and Kiner are really big recruits, but they're not there yet. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a question mark. And I kind of still am going to operate like, I think that room's going to be fine. Like, there's it's running back, they're gonna be okay, but yeah, no, it's a problem. Yeah, absolutely.
It's weird to think about them being fine when you would have thought at this point that we'd be talking about it being one of the best. I mean, we have talked about, we thought it was going to become one of the best groups in the entire team, so I don't know. And look, when you look at the offense that they want to run, you don't need one guy to be Clyde. I think you can make up Clyde's kind of production with multiple guys. But the position, well, I don't know, actually. Now, I might fight against myself here. I was going to say, but the position is critical. But Jake Peets has been painfully clear that he's taking a best five mentality. Yeah. And he wants the best five. And they might get creative at running back. I mean, they've had Devontae Lee taking running back reps. So, like,
Derek Davis, yeah.
Yeah, so there's potential. It's just a group where, and it's mainly, I think a lot of it does trace back to TDP and John Emery. So much talent, so much hype coming to high school, and just haven't quite fulfilled it yet.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think for me, it's just like a generic, like, you have five legitimately highly touted scholarship guys. Like, I have a gut feeling it's going to work itself out. And I just don't ask as much of running back. So maybe that's where my, like, my foolish take's coming from. But I just, like, I don't, like, put that much pressure on running back, because I think, like, their job tends to be a little simpler. And, you know,
that's
so
fair.
I'm not, like, losing sleep over it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
You could also almost copy-paste a lot of the running back conversation, maybe with a bit less recruiting talent, and then just, like, paste it onto the backup offensive line. Because it is also a group that has had no development.
Yeah, we actually plan on talking about that a lot more, and we didn't, but we can quickly, let's hit it real quick.
Yeah, I just it's like every week I'm asking for check-ins from Mo, just trying to get some name that's impressed, and it's just not there. It's like maybe Anthony Bradford if he can lose a little weight, but it's like, how are you still having weight problems? That's a horrible sign to begin with. About like, can you be relied upon?
And you're in year three. If you, like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
If you're still having those problems, you're probably always going to have them. I guess all I'm saying.
Yeah. And
everyone's making this big thing of 5-0 linemen back, and it's like, again, I think they're going to be better this year. I do believe those five are going to be better, but like, it's not like there were five guys coming back who were superstars last year. It was a below average offensive line for the most part last year, and they had great moments, but it wasn't like completely great. And now you have those five back, and they apparently had a really tough time in the first scrimmage, like a really tough time.
Yeah.
And then you have, like you said, yeah, Bradford's the one name you'll hear, but you have no real depth there. I mean, I've heard Ogeron's told people, yeah, like he's concerned. Like, they have nobody they can really turn to there.
I mean, who's the backup center? Like Charles Turner? Like,
we
say five back. We could almost say six back because Cam Wire. And I do think that Cam Wire's your first man up, which is a little salve on that wound because he did prove to be able to play, like, okay, you know, left tackle, right tackle, left guard, right guard. Like, he can handle any of the other four. But if you catch two injuries, just two, which happens all the time, all of a sudden you're putting someone in there that you're really not confident in at all. And that can break down an entire offense.
I don't want to make you sad, but you know what should worry you even more?
What
is that? Okay, you look around this entire roster. 2022 should, in theory, be a really good year for LSU, just like overall talent.
Yeah.
Except, think about what your offensive line is in 2022.
Yeah.
That's like actual, real, real red flag. Kind of like concern that I haven't seen at LSU in a few years, where it's like, wait, I do not know what that future looks like. That's bleak. So I think that's got even more than like some injuries right now, which, by the way, yes, those are concerns. I'm not downplaying that. But like, that's even scarier. It's like, wait. All five of these guys are gone next year.
I would say grad transfers.
But that's not a great grad transfer position.
I know. I mean, wasn't Landon Dickerson, was he grad transfer? I mean,
well, he was a Florida State transfer because Florida State was, you know, I don't know.
Well, okay. My point is, though, yes, this is just a like full court press, leave no stone unturned. Like, we have to sell how open the path to the field is here and how good the rest of the team is. And then, like, if you want, that's why having a really successful year this year will be so important, is convincing guys like, look, come join up midstream. It's our one weakness. We could be really damn good if we get it solved.
Yeah, I'm not saying they can't fix it. It's LSU. Of course they can. I'm just wanted to like bring that.
No, it's dark, dude. It is dark. No, without a doubt. I mean, you're going to lose the entire offensive line, and you don't really feel good about anybody. And whatever. Maybe Martinez and Hill and Dellinger and some of these other guys like develop, but it just has not happened yet, and that's been disappointing, especially for guys like Bradford and Thomas, who
also their 2022 class, not that you're asking freshman O-linemen to be good or anything like that, but like, they're really hitting on the 2022 O-line class.
Yeah, I know, but it's like you said, roster management, it's like such a timing deal as well. And I'm going to ask Austin Thomas about that next week, too. That's a good idea. He's good on the roster management. All right, Brody, anything else on what's interesting you in spring right now?
No, man. We took a few weeks off, and I think we hit everything we need to hit. We're killing it.
Yeah, so we'll be back next week and every week thereafter. The Athletic's had a great promotion going on right now. Remember, The Athletic does a ton of great college football podcasts, really like any sport that you love. Sign up for The Athletic, and they have really talented writers covering it. It's truly fantastic. I've even read a couple Wolverhampton articles, though I'm too ADD to actually keep up with my Wolves love. I've only watched one game thus far. But,
well, it's been tough. You just started becoming a fan.
Yeah, right, when the international a break.
Yeah, exactly. So this is your time, man.
But yeah, man, thank you to everyone joining us. Look, if you like the show, rate or review it, share it. TheAthletic.com/holdthatpodcast. Find us on iTunes, all that good stuff. Brody, you have an excellent day, my friend.
You too, my guy.
All right, take it easy. We'll see you next week on the Hold That Podcast.